Hello everyone, and welcome once again to PSC Phone Show Chat, and this is number 874. We're recording this on Monday the 24th of November in 2025, and this fortnight we are joined, Joe and I are joined by Jim Fowle. So hello to you both.
Hello there.
Hello, hello. Jim, remind everyone, since you were last on the show, kind of roughly where you live and how old you are and what you do for a living, if anything, or like the rest of us loaf about doing nothing.
My name's Jim Fowle. I live in Norfolk with my wife and two children. You're right, though, Ted. I do loaf about, or I try to anyway, since I gave up working last year. But we seem to be now in the phase of completely renovating our house. So my wife is working me far harder than I did when I was actually at work. So I'm 57 years old. Like I said, retired. And you'd think I'd have more time to play with phones, but I don't seem to at the moment.
Are you allowed to say what you used to do for a living?
I can. I used to work for one of the country's major telecom suppliers. Yeah. It's only got two letters in its name, so you can guess which one.
Talking of which, Joe, he's the guy that does go to work every day, slogging in there on the bus every day, keeping his family together and working really hard, which I used to do, to be fair, when I was your age, Joe. Are you okay?
Yeah, not too bad. Obviously, working hard, as you say. It's the golden quarter, as they call it, which is meant to be fun in retail, but it's not been that fun, to be honest. It's been a bit tough. People aren't buying handsets at the moment, it seems.
That's not so good. Okay, well, we'll come to that in a second. We'll wait for you to finish your ice cream sandwich, or as we call it in this country, a wafer, but we won't go there.
Yes, I finished that just before, yeah. It does have wafer, but it's the two wafers together and the chocolate that makes it a sandwich, you see.
Phoneshowchat.uk is our website. Head across there for links to all the stuff that we do. If you get lost, it's all at tedsalmon.com as well. MeWe is where we kind of congregate mostly, I think. You just head across there. Links in the show notes and at tedsalmon.com, so you'll find it wherever you go. There's a whacking great big picture of this bearded bloke with some other nerdy-looking people in our recording notes. And I think that the main character is you, Joe.
Yes, that beardo is me. it was that was taken on my V5, actually. I'm quite pleased with that picture. That was at the honour event I mentioned last show. Right. And it was really great to meet Ian Furlong in person. I'm looking forward to meeting other PSC community in the future. But in the image, I've also got Chris. He does some quite good written stuff on technewscentury.co.uk.
Right.
You've got Ian. I don't know if everyone knows Ian already. Probably do, but he has coolsmartphone.com.
Oh, yeah.
You've then got me, the beardo, and everyone knows my screen on time handle. Screen on time YT for YouTube. And then the giant in the back there is Paul. They call him Geeky Stuff. You'll find him on socials with Geeky Stuff. Yeah.
Okay. And so the four of you were there at the photograph is in our MeWe group in a post, which I'll link to in the show notes. But if you're listening to this and you haven't joined MeWe, you won't be able to see it unless you join. So if you click on it, it will just invite you to join, which is a good idea anyway. So just do it. So
yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So you can't say too much about the honour event, but because you're under some sort of embargo. But we will touch on some of the honour stuff a bit later in the show. So watch this space. Ed House is next.
Yes, he said it was interesting to hear me talk about the Moment camera app on the last show. He hasn't tried that himself, but he has tried... recently uninstalled three others. Project Indigo, which I've not heard of. Leica Lux and Halide 2. I've heard Halide 2 is quite good, actually, because he just doesn't use phones that way. As impressive as they are at times, if there's anything interesting to take a photo of, he reaches for his box with knobs instead. Knobs on instead, I meant to say. it said it made me remember what was so nice about the Pixel 7a, really, the fire and forget reliability of the Pixel camera app and the double press on the power button to launch the camera are the pinnacle of smartphone photography and is in my currently lacking in Xiaomi Sony experience. The Sony's not bad at point and shoot now, I think. But anyway, I've realised that it's easier to use a proper camera to get the unprocessed look and only use phones where utmost convenience is required, and then to try and find launch the best app for the situation. I kind of agree, because as much as I mentioned the Moment app last week, I am very much with phones, point and shoot. So, yeah, I do agree there. I don't know what you chaps think.
I had the Sony out again this week, and it's just like, this is just hard work. If you want to take photographs with a phone, then just make it simple. I do agree with Ed. Jim?
I'm not really a big photos guy. I'm sure I've mentioned that before. Right. So I don't tend to worry about what type of camera a phone's got, but I will admit that the last actual camera I probably bought was a Fuji FinePix 6900 back in 2001 when my wife and I went to Australia, and that's because it was a lot cheaper in Australia than it was at home. But I don't really worry about camera stuff. It's, I think for me, the best camera is the one that I've got in my pocket at any time.
Yeah, I do agree, and I think most people agree with that. But there is this forward surge of every phone that comes out. It's got to be the camera that's talked about the most. We spoke about this on a previous show, which is very tedious indeed. So let's talk about something else. Let's talk about Malcolm Bryant and his free POC downloader and Google Play Protect. So here's the latest twist in my love-hate relationship with Google, says Malcolm. Google has started to flag free POC downloader as potentially harmful. That's because it can install other apps, those being my own apps, of course, written by me and hosted on my free POC website, none of which are harmful, of course. Faced with this scary message, no one is going to install free POC downloader. It's my word that the app is perfectly okay versus Google's scary warning. And I probably wouldn't install anyone else's app either if it showed me this scary warning. So I need to appeal to try and get it to get free POC downloader whitelisted by Google. That's a process I've never been through before, says Malcolm, so I have no idea if it's administered by a rational human being or by robots. I need to fill a form in online explaining why the app isn't harmful. Worryingly, the form says that there'll be no response from Google, so I guess once I filled it in, I'll just have to go and check every day myself to see if it's still doing it. My argument to Google will be that free POC has been around for 26 years. I can vouch for all the hosted apps because I wrote them myself, and free POC downloader doesn't install app from anywhere but free POC's own website. However, I'm not confident of success, says Malcolm. He will update us if there's any further news to share on that, but I guess he's now checking every day to see what's going on.
Google, I bet it is naughty. A bot, the fact that it says there's no response from Google.
Yeah. That's shocking, isn't it, really? Yeah. So fill in this process and we won't ever tell you what we're doing.
Yeah. You just have to go and look and see if it's still there. Okay, right, enough of this. Guest Scala time, and it's Jim, centre stage, to talk about whatever you like. And we have some crossover because you and I have been sending various phones to each other to try out. And this looks like an interesting meander.
It is a bit of a meander because, like, you know, I usually like a bit more structure and be forced down a path, but to left meandering could eat the podcast time, really. I think up until recently, Ted, a device I got from you as well, the Motorola Razr 50 Ultra, did have my SIM card in it for quite a long time, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I did like using the flip form factor with the Clicks keyboard. It was a very interesting combo and really did take me back to my BlackBerry days, because I had a number of BlackBerries through work when I was working. Well, in the earlier years of working, when you could only really get a BlackBerry, I got to admit, at first with a BlackBerry, I didn't even know it had a phone in it, to be honest. I thought it was just an email device. But yeah, right. So that was great. And then you sent back the Bigme Hybrid Pro, because as I've mentioned before, I'm really into the kind of e-ink devices at the moment with the e-ink screens. But after a couple of weeks with my SIM card in the Hybrid Pro, I started to kind of notice exactly what you'd mentioned in your comments, that the Hybrid Pro is just a bit too sluggish and clunky to actually use day by day. It did make it a challenge to actually use it. And my secondary phone is the iPhone 15 at the moment, and I found myself reaching for the iPhone more than I did the Hybrid Pro. So
let's just have a run through what the Hybrid Pro is for those that don't know. So Bigme Hybrid Pro is an e-ink phone, which is a bit like a Books Palmer device, but it's the Books Palmer series don't have you can't make phone calls on them. It's got Android 14 on it, 256 gigabytes of memory, 8 gigs of RAM, a 4500 milliamp hour battery. You can get it in black or white. It's, what else can we say about it? When I had it here, it was stuck on Android 14 and May 25 security, so I don't know if that's changed since I sent it back.
I've got to admit, I haven't checked that.
Okay.
So I don't actually know. I didn't look at that, but I think for me, the main thing is the screen. The screen is great. It does refresh a lot because it's an e-ink screen, but the look of the screen is great, I should say. Mm-hmm. But another thing, because it's such a low power screen, is that it does have really good battery life, or it did for me.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not watching videos on it, you're not scrolling TikTok or Instagram or anything like that. So, you know, it kind of cuts down that type of media consumption because you're not going to do it on that phone. So the battery life is a lot longer. I think that the main problem I found with it is that the processors are just too slow in them. Coming from flagship or mid-range phones, you know, it's very hard to get used to something that runs so slowly.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's definitely what I found. And that's the understatement of the year as well. It's infuriatingly slowly that it does anything at all. Screen swipes and executions and selections and taps. It's just a complete nightmare. I think it's unusable.
What chipset does it use?
You have to slow yourself down to use it, because as I mentioned beforehand when we were chatting, you'd tap on something, it didn't react straight away, so you'd tap on it again, and then you'd have a double tap.
So
they really do need to kind of beef them up a bit. I think if they put in faster processors, then, you know, the lag may not be as bad, and that may take away from the screen refresh as well.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's Dimensity 1080 chipset, that's what he uses.
1080.
So what?
Dimensity 1080.
The 1080.
Yeah.
That's quite low, the 1080. When you consider that the Dimensity 9500 is in the flagship devices now, that are running, you know, but this is just a different device, isn't it? It's for a different purpose and a different kind of use case, really.
Yeah.
Did you find anything with the ghosting?
I find the ghosting doesn't bother me because it does clear itself up reasonably. If you're using the phone a lot, it does refresh and clear itself up. And you can change the screen mode. So you can go to a faster mode, so it clears it faster. Mm-hmm. Or you can slow it down to what they call a regal mode, where the quality of the picture is a lot better. So they do have various refresh modes, and you can select one that suits your purpose, so to speak.
Yeah. The other thing that was just horribly worrying about the whole thing for me was that as soon as I turned it on, it was all in Chinese. Even when I reset it, to send it back to you, and it was firing itself up in Chinese. In order to get past the first screen, you had to guess at what to tap to actually say, I want English. And I, because it was just, the whole thing was in Chinese. And furthermore, as I think I mentioned before, actually, the, on a previous show, they encourage you very, very strongly to be opening a BigMe account to do any of the kind of AI cloud based stuff. And frankly, I came to a point where I wasn't prepared to do that, and because I wasn't prepared to do that, I wasn't either prepared to give it the details of my Google account. I mean, over cautious as I may be, I just wasn't going to sign in on the thing. I just didn't trust it.
Yeah, I got to admit, I didn't think about the Google part, so I signed in with my account until I read your post, and I thought, oh, maybe I should have thought about that a bit more. But I didn't, like you, I didn't create a BigMe account. I've not used any of their AI stuff. I did install ChatGPT and Gemini on it to have a play, and that seems to work reasonably okay. Mm-hmm. I suppose that's because it's shipping a lot of the processing up into the cloud to do rather than on the phone.
Yeah.
But, it is an interesting device, but like you say, I don't think it's really there. It would need to be a bit more powerful, a bit faster to make it a daily driver, I think.
Yeah, unless you completely change your expectation.
Yeah, I don't think even I could change mine that far.
There's a couple of, before we leave the High Break Pro, there's a couple of other ones which are either just arriving or on the horizon. The BigMe High Break Pro Color, which I think is slightly different to the one that we have because it's got color. And there's also a BigMe High Break S. Now, what's the difference between that one? I can't remember now.
Wasn't the S the cut down cheaper one? Wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, I mean,
the High Break Pro is slow, what's the S going to be like?
Yeah, so they're making a cheap one, but I'm not sure if it's smaller as well. I'll click through and have a look. Yeah. And oh yeah, it is. It's a 5.84-inch screen, so it's certainly smaller than the big one that you've got.
Maybe it still uses the same processor then.
It says a super fast refresh tech. Yeah, right.
It is BigMe, or is it Books? I think it might be Books that have got their own kind of super refresh technology. Like I said, I've watched a YouTube video. I can't remember the details, but I think it's Books that have a super refresh technology that clears up the ghosting a lot quicker without the flashing perception.
Yeah, you can pull down on the top left of the screen. Yeah. You just swipe it down and it refreshes it.
Yeah.
What I did like about the BigMe though was that you got an always on display. Typically you could put a calendar and a clock and stuff on it like that, and it's always on. Now you can't see it unless it's daylight, just like a Kindle, but it was actually really nice that it was always on, and at least in daytimes you could just glance at it and see what you wanted.
I think the e-ink does have a lot going for it, but like, you know, I think it needs a bit further development. I mean, I wrote a whole diatribe about e-ink stuff in the show notes. We could just delve into that if you want quickly.
Yep.
Well, like I say, it's become a major interest to me, mainly because of the screens and how they look outside, exactly as you said, Ted. I started with the Books Palmer one, loved that. See, the benefit for, there's two types of e-ink devices in the ecosystem. There's the lockdown ones, like the Kindle Scribes, the Remarkable Paper Pro, the Paper Pro Move, the smaller one that they've just bought out. And then you've got your kind of, I suppose, is it the more Chinese variants? I don't know, where they're all running Android. So it makes them a bit more open. And that's what interests me, is I can't use one that's locked down because I use cross-device services. I can't really get into, I did buy a Kindle Scribe off the forum, as you do, and I couldn't get into it because it was locked down. So I sold that to someone at my wife's work and bought the Booksnote Air 4C, which is a 10-inch e-ink colour tablet. And that, because it's got the colour filter on it as well, it does make the screen a bit darker, which I didn't realise at the time, but I've kind of got used to that. But the black and white screens really are the best ones if you're going to go for something in the e-ink range. But then, you know, you can't read anything in colour on it, which I tend to use the Note Air 4C to read my one subscription to PC Pro magazine that I've had for most of my adult life, I think.
Right, yeah.
So, but yeah, so, you know, that's the kind of difference between them. You've got the lockdown ones that are premium and super fast, and that, but they can't do anything that you might want to do with it. And then you've got the kind of Chinese alternatives like Books, BigMe, where they're running Android and they're more open for you to install other apps via the Google Play Store.
Except that they don't get updated ever. This is one of the annoying things.
That is the one.
The version of Android it comes with is the one that it's on forever, and that's
forever.
Just we've got so used to that being a big thing with phones now that just seems like archaic and mad and wrong. The other thing to mention is that the Books Note Air 4C, the last time I looked, is £500. So it's not a cheap option, and it's not a phone. No.
But I do use it for everything, for writing notes. All the notes I wrote, well, not when I typed them up into the Google document, but when I was out sitting in Costa thinking about the use of devices and what I'd say on tonight's show, I actually hand wrote those notes into Microsoft OneNote on the Books Note Air 4C.
Right.
And it really does feel like paper to me. That screen feels like paper. So I've kind of, for the first time in years, I've got back into actually writing things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what came next after that?
Well, next, I did get in the TCL NextPaper 50 Pro.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
I bought that off of Jeremy Harpen in PSC Classifieds again. But to you earlier, I haven't had a chance to really get back into using that since I borrowed your one beforehand.
Right.
So it's kind of sat on the table forlornly at the moment because you sent me back the Titan 2 and my SIM card had to go back into that.
Right, we'll come to that in a second. On the next paper, I'd also say that just yesterday I got delivery of my 60 Ultra, my next paper 60 Ultra. And I think that somewhere down the line we could probably do a bit of a special on TCL next paper as well, particularly the differences between Next Paper 3, which is on the 50 Pro, and Next Paper 4, which is on the 60 Ultra. And the 14-inch tablet and the 11-inch plus tablet as well. So the 4 has moved it all a bit forward. So I think we'll come back. Perhaps we'll grab you and bring you back on the show, Jim.
I'd love to come back on for that one too. Yeah, I would, because I've got the TCL NextPaper 50 Pro and the NextPaper 11 tablet.
Oh, okay. Okay, so
we could
cook up an NextPaper special, I reckon. Do you think, Joe?
Excellent.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I was going to quickly ask, like, would you chaps say that TCL were doing it best with the e-ink stuff, or?
No, it's not e-ink.
It's not?
No.
They call it e-paper, don't they?
Oh, yeah, e-paper, yeah.
I don't think they do they? I
have,
and the point is though that they don't claim it to be e-ink at all. It's an LCD display, but the way in which they've created the top layer of the glass makes it feel really, really much like paper.
I remember now.
It isn't, and also it's got almost zero reflection on it. So if you hold an ordinary phone in the reflection of a bright light and just move them around, you'll see that there's virtually no reflection coming back from the next paper technology devices. And the 4.0 has moved that forward even further by about 20-30% improvement. So anyway, yeah, let's do a next paper special, because I think by then I will have had the 60 Ultra and you'll have had the 50 Pro, and we can we can make that go. Yeah,
sounds good to me.
Okay.
So I guess my question would change slightly. Would you say what TCL is doing is better than e-ink, or?
I think looking at the differences, when I had said TCL NextPaper 50 Pro before and the tablet, it's not quite as good as the black and white e-ink.
Okay.
But it is very, very usable, and I did love using that device. When Ted lent it to me, I had my SIM in it for quite a long time, actually, which surprised me, to be honest.
And the battery lasts forever if you put it into super what's it mode. And just use it in the lowest power mode. I had about 10 days out of it when I tested the 50 Pro, yeah. In that mode, only a certain number of apps will work and a certain number of functions. It's really pared down. So if you want it to last for that length of time, you have to make compromises.
And one of the great things about it is the mode switch. So you can switch between normal screen use and like the kind of e-paper, e-inky-like display at will. And I found that was the best part, being able to switch back and forth in one device.
yeah, definitely. We'll do a next paper special, Jim, and we'll get you back on. And we'll do that great. Somewhere down the line when we've both had time to play a bit more. So
I'll have to try and get one.
I'll send you one, Joe. I'll send you my 50 Pro, and then when we come to do the show, we'll all three have had one, okay?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Right, Titan 2 / BlackBerry.
Yep.
Go, Jim.
Do you want to do your initial thoughts first, or shall I go through my... You've had more time with it. I've only had my SimNit for a few days. I could chip in.
Too many. Right. Okay. My thoughts on it. Too many devices we've all got, it seems. I wasn't really convinced about the QWERTY thing in 2025, but I was keen to have a look. I wasn't a BlackBerry fan. I didn't particularly like BlackBerry. And back in the day, I was confused by BlackBerry OS. When BlackBerry turned into Android, I was much more enthusiastic. Although I did have the BlackBerry Passport for a while, and I did like the bigger keys on that, which this kind of heads towards, although it's not quite the same. But it's quite interesting. And there's a little screen on the back, which sounds interesting, a bit like the Xiaomi thingy, what they're doing on the back of their screens. Of course, it's nowhere near as capable as that. But it's a little screen on the back, which I'll come to. Built like a tank. Do chip in, Jim, wherever you feel the need.
I most definitely agree on that part. When I got it out of the box, I couldn't quite believe it.
Titan's a fitting name, then.
Yeah, you can knock nails in with it.
I thought the original Titan was big, but this one it seems bigger.
and it's blocky as well. It seems premium in every way. And it's very wide in the hand. So I found that it was almost exclusively a two-handed device.
I'll agree with that, because if you try to do anything with it with one hand, you're going to drop it. That's for sure.
Yeah. The keyboard, I thought, was very clicky on individual keys. The keys had good travel, and they had a nice feel to them, yeah?
Yep, agreed. Okay. Do like the keys. The one thing I don't like is the position of the modifier keys, and like the shift, the all, and that. Years of BlackBerry use that have done this to me, but I can't get used to the modifier keys not being at the bottom.
Yeah,
I do get why they've done it, because of the BlackBerry licensing stuff and that, I guess. So
it's a bit frustrating. I do agree. Okay, yeah. In the box there was a 3-pin UK charger, which was encouraging. There's a USB to C to USB C cable. There was also USB C to 3.5mm female audio cable in the box, which I was really surprised at. I wasn't expecting that at all.
Do you know what on that, Ted? I wonder where that came. It must have fallen out of the box, because I found it on the side and I thought, where did I get that cable from? So it must have come out of the Titan's box.
That was a nice touch, I thought, because they've taken away the 3.5mm audio out port on the device from the first generation, but they put this little dongle in, and they didn't have to do that, and I think it's quite a nice touch. Perhaps Google will listen and see that going on. There's a black TPU cover in the box, which I didn't think much of, to be honest. I don't know what you thought, Jim, but it seems slippery.
I've not even taken it out of the box, Ted. Not taking it out of the box.
It seems slippery. I'm sure that it's probably going to help with protection a bit, but the thing is so solid, I can't see it really matters. Did you like the square screen?
I do like the square screen. I do like that. And the fact that, it is a very good screen as well, despite it being an LCD. It is very bright, clear. I was surprised by that as well. But the screen is very good on it. The screen on the back, I've not really got around to playing with that much yet because I spent the last couple of days just setting it up. So, yeah, no, but I do agree. I do like the square screen, that kind of more businessly-like approach. It's much better for doing MeWe on, for sure.
I'll jump down to my, it's called the subscreen. I'll jump down to where I've made the notes about that. It's called the subscreen. The basic use is that it shows a clock from, you can choose from different designs and you can double tap it to wake it up. Then it shows for 15 seconds, although you can change that from 15 seconds if you want to pretty much any time you want, so you could just leave it on all the time. You can also get it to display some apps, although with my unit the only app that seemed to work was the YouTube Music, so I might have had the wrong apps installed or whatever, and someone else might have more. So you can get a tiny video playing on that little back screen of YouTube Music switched to video. And then if you turn the device round, it kind of flips around and you can watch it sideways. But it was very flaky, to be honest. It timed out. When I was watching video, it a couple of times, it just timed out and stopped working. But it's, it works and you can do it if you want to. There's more usefully, I think, is the media player. So if you swipe right, you can, and you've got music playing, you get a little media player, not video but just music, and that times itself out as well, so that won't stay on. You can also use the rear-facing camera to do selfies and whatever else, so people can see what, you know, if you're taking a picture of someone, they can actually have a look and see what they look like a mirror, really. Etc. So yeah, when you start to play with it, you'll start to unfold what happens on the subscreen. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fingerprint scanner was good, I thought. Set up really quickly. The face unlock was really good. Lift to wake works with that. The battery for the time I had it, I thought it was playing quite. I didn't have it very long, to be honest, but I thought the battery was doing quite well. And the 33-watt charging by cable is all you get. But on the original one, you got wireless charging, didn't you?
I think you did, yeah.
Which was
I think
much
you did.
Better.
But on the battery front, what you've mentioned there is I've had it off charge since about 6:30 a.m. this morning. It's been with me all day. I won't say I've used it heavily today because the central heating broke down. I spent most of the day trying to get that restarted. But it's still on 88% and it's not been near a charger all day.
Right. Right. So yeah, it'd be worth testing the battery because I didn't really get the chance to do it exhaustively. 12 gigs of RAM, which is good. There's 512 gigabytes of storage, but unlike the first generation, no micro SD card slot. There's no home screen elements stuck in place. Google Discover feed is present as well. What about the speakers? Have you had a chance to listen to the speaker?
It's a bit weaselly, isn't it, to say the least. I found it very, like you said, I found it a bit tinny. And when you play stuff through an iPhone or a Samsung, it's a poor relation to that, isn't it, I guess.
Yeah. Single firing speaker, boo.
I've not installed Wavelet yet, but I will do. Although I find I don't really tend to listen to a lot of stuff through the phone speaker. I may listen to the old podcast when I cook, which is about two times a year.
Right. Yeah, Wavelet works really quite well, as it always does. You're right, though, Joe. There's a single bottom-firing speaker for that. And it's loud, but it's just not very good quality. Yeah, Wavelet helps that a bit. Turn the volume down, and it helps even more. So that's okay. The keyboard is backlit, Jim. I don't know if you've discovered that yet.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I noticed that straight away, quite handy.
And also, you can use the screen as a... Now, this is turned off by default, I've discovered. You can, but you can use the keyboard as a cursor thingy, like the Black Repass board you did. So you should like that.
I did find that tonight because I read that it was there and I thought, why isn't it working? And so I did dig into the settings a bit tonight before the show and found that the cursor settings for it. So, yeah, that's very useful, that is. I do like that.
When you start digging into the settings, it's a maze. That yeah. I spent ages finding stuff in the settings, and there's tons of stuff in there. It's really well thought out. It's just that it's a maze, and everything that's useful seems to be off by default. So there's a bunch of, like the first generation, there's a bunch of bloatware installed, but there are also some interesting and useful stuff that they put on as well. The toolbox app, I remember, with the compass and the torch and the spirit level, that was on the first one. Loads of stuff going on in there, so that's really nice. What else have we got? The top left key is, yeah, right, okay, so what you were saying earlier about the keys being in the wrong place, really, I got a bit lost with what was doing what, frankly. But again, you learn quickly how to make sure that you are using the numbers and the alphabetic letters, and you kind of get that in the end. This note about mini mode, what's this? Three songs. Oh yeah, that's right. So if you swipe down on the screen with three, again, you've got to turn this on. This is off by default, but if you switch it on, you can swipe down with three fingers on the screen and it changes it from the square format to the more traditional candy bar ratio. And I found that was most useful when I was using TikTok, because TikTok, you lose from the top and the bottom because it's designed for a phone screen, a normal phone screen. But if you do the three swipe down, you get black bars left and right, and then you see it as you're supposed to see it. So have a look out for that one, because that makes it
I see it's in the, I've got it on the desk here, so I've just had a look in the settings while you was talking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's in the gestures menu. You're right about stuff being buried.
yeah it just everything just seems to be off by default. It's really odd. So, yeah, and I thought that going back to what you were saying about the LCD screen, as LCD screens go, I think it's a good and a bright one, and it's colourful, and, yeah, it's absolutely fine, except for the usual caveats about LCD screens, I suppose. And my conclusion, really, was that so far, it's not really for me. You're a BlackBerry user. You might be much more enthusiastic about it than me. But for me, no. It feels like it's like 15, 20 years ago, and we've got so used to on-screen keyboards. It wasn't for me.
I still hark back to it, though. You know what I'm like with keyboarded things. So, yeah. I mean, like I say, apart from the modifier keys, I am loving typing on it, and it has taken me back to, sitting around various places bashing out emails and messages on a BlackBerry. It does take you back to that way. But one other thing I really do like that I noticed this time is I'm not a big fan of auto rotate most of the time. I find it annoying if I happen to be sitting at an odd angle or something. Mm-hmm. But on this, if for example on the Titan 2, if you turn the screen sideways, a little thing pops up. And then you click that and it'll rotate if you want to.
Yeah.
If you see what I mean. So you've got like a manual control for the rotate if you want to.
That's built into Android. You'll find that on most phones. Yeah.
I've used that before.
yeah. That is useful.
I thought that was a really nice touch. I'm surprised I've not spotted that before.
Okay. That's because you probably had auto-rotate on.
Most of the time I do. Yeah. But I suppose it was off, like Ted said, it was off by default on this one, so it popped up this time. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that. I'm going to go and switch it off on all the others then.
So you had something to say about Bluetooth, jumping back to your notes.
That's the one thing I noticed. I mean, with the Samsung Galaxy Fold 6 and the iPhone 15, with a smartwatch on, I can fairly much wander around the house and it will stay connected. Now, the Bigmi Hybrid Pro, that was the first one I noticed where the Bluetooth disconnected if I left the phone upstairs and got downstairs. But with the Titan 2, I've only got to walk out of the room and into another room, another bedroom, and it loses connection. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that means that the Bluetooth radio is not as strong or not putting out as much power as the others do.
I'm quite surprised at that.
I get frequent disconnects on the watch.
But maybe you should try it without the watch in the mix.
So I was going to say, what I need to turn is just turn the disconnect notice off on the watch. It doesn't really matter. I just turn it off.
I
wish the watch would stop telling me.
Try turning the watch off altogether and then putting some put some headphones on and then see if it does the same thing.
Yeah.
Which is quite surprising, I think.
Interesting to know, yeah, see how that goes.
I've got Google Buds connected to it, so where did I put them?
I do think that Bluetooth gets confused with various devices. I have to agree. If you've got too many things, and Sony was bad at this. If you've got too many things connected to it by Bluetooth, it just gets confused sometimes. There you go.
It's getting better, but it's
I think the only problem, I've only got the watch and the headphones connected to this one, I think. So I think the range is a bit limited on it, so the Bluetooth radio might be a bit poor. But then it's a cheap device, isn't it? You can't say that I paid a great, fantastic amount of money for it. Getting in on the Kickstarter means I think I paid about £279 for it or something like that.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
Good it's fun. A lot of phone for that. I'll give it that. Yeah. It is a lot of phone for that.
It's good fun. And I'm sure that you'll have great fun with it. And
yeah, I am already.
We'll look forward to, a bit of a feedback in a future show. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. The one thing I would say on it, if they could do this, the same size width-wise, but get half the depth on it, then it would be fantastic. It is a bit of a chunk, isn't it? If they could halve that size width-wise...
Oh, you mean the fatness?
Yeah, the depth of it, you know, how chunky it is. Like, right. You know, I don't mind the width of it. Sorry, the width is fine. The depth is the problem, how deep it is. Like, you know, if they could just slim it down a bit, it would be fantastic. Maybe if they could get it down to the BlackBerry Passport type size, that would be really good.
And it wouldn't weigh down your trousers then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, watches is next. And you've become a bit of a fan.
Yeah, I mentioned in the watches, an addict is probably what I like it, yeah. I've got to keep off PSC classifieds, you know, keep me out. But, I've developed a new passion or addiction for watches. I've got a Galaxy Watch 6, a Galaxy Watch 7, Galaxy Watch Ultra, Apple Watch Ultra first generation, a couple of OnePlus Watch 2Rs, and my last purchase, I couldn't help it, was an half-price deal, and I couldn't help myself, was a Garmin Epix Pro Gen 2. I suppose that they're not, the Garmins are not really, they are smartwatches, but they're not in the sense of your Galaxy and your Apple Watch. Like, you know, you can get WhatsApp messages on it, and you can do, like, replies on it, but only set replies that you might have already set up, whereas on a Galaxy Watch Ultra or a or the Apple Watch Ultra, I get confused with the names now, you can fully reply on those, but these are like canned responses. But the thing I've noticed with the Garmin watch is the battery life.
Mm-hmm.
I like the always on screen on, and even with the always on screen and everything running on it, I get 5 days battery life from it. And if you turned off the always on screen, it'd go for 12. Right. I mean, that's coming from an Apple Watch or a Galaxy Watch. That's like a revelation, isn't it? Of charging your watch every night if you actually use it. So,
is it running Wear OS?
No. I don't actually know what OS it's running. I have to look into that.
If it's not running Wear OS, then that's probably the reason, because Wear OS just seems to drain batteries on everything.
But I never really thought about it before, but it is a bit of a game changer to have that much battery life and not worry about it so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then even when after the 5 days, it will pip up and say, do you want to turn off like the SPO2 sensor and stuff like that and get another 6 days out?
Yeah.
We can turn off some sensors and you can last for another 6 days if you want. So I found that to be quite a good thing. But like I said, it does all the kind of health aspects that you would expect it to do, like an Apple Watch or a Galaxy Watch, but it doesn't quite do some of the smartwatch capabilities that you can on the others. Like, I can't install Pocket Casts and things like that on it. I can download music to it for sure, and it's got Amazon Music, which we use here, so you know that does work. But yeah, but I'm just finding not having to charge it every night is quite a nice thing.
Cool. I've never had a Garmin product at all, so I don't know. But it sounds to me like it's Wear OS that's missing, which would which would explain why you can't install various apps on it. Of course.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's no apps. You can get watch faces and stuff like that from the Garmin store.
Yeah.
But you know, it just doesn't have the kind of all round capability that you'd find on one of the other watches. But the funny thing is, I find I'm not missing it, if that makes any sense. I'm getting notifications. Yeah. I tend to have my phone with me most of the time. So I'm getting notifications as I would do on an Apple Watch or one of the others. And, you know, I find I'm not really missing those advanced capabilities that much.
Mm-hmm. Joe, you're a big watch fan these days, aren't you?
I do like them, but I think I only need basic stuff. I like it for notifications and some of the health specs. I like it for my sleep tracking. But yeah, I don't think I need too much smarts on it because I find that I don't use many apps on my watch. So a Garmin might
like
be good for me.
You'll like the next one I'm getting then, Joe.
Oh, yeah.
I did back the Pebble as well.
Oh, yes, that's brilliant.
Much as basic as you could get at it, really. But it hasn't turned up yet. So.
Yeah, that it does look good, that, the new one.
Yeah.
You had a OnePlus, didn't you, Joe?
Yeah, I've still got the OnePlus Watch 2, which I really, really like. Decent battery life. You get about 3 days from it, so not quite as good as the Garmin. A lovely screen on it, really good hardware as well. So, and it looks like a smart watch as well, like a classic watch rather, if you put the right face on it, which I like about it. I've got a metal strap that I bought from Amazon to make it look more classic. Yeah, I really like it. And that 3 days is with sleep tracking as well, and always on
display.
That's
not bad though, is it? 3 days, even that would be a revelation compared to the Apple Watch that I have to charge every night.
Yeah.
It depends what you want, doesn't it? That's the thing. I mean, I've got a Galaxy Watch Ultra here, and I like to use the speaker on it to play music because it's so good, and I can't leave it alone. But it takes 10% of the battery every hour you use it. And if you're going down the gym and you're doing all sorts of stuff with a clever watch that takes battery, then it's going to use the battery in a day and every day possibly more.
Argue gym wise you're better off with a Garmin, something that's going to track that sports stuff a bit better. A lot of the people in the Miri community seem to really swear by the Garmin watches.
I've noticed that. And to finish my point, really, but the go back to the Moto dumb watch, if you like, all it does is notifications. Well, it doesn't, it does some health stuff, but it's really basic. And that lasts 16 days, as you know, Joe. And so it depends what you want your watch to do. That's the thing. You've got to kind of balance up the pros and cons, haven't you?
Well, there is one in classified that I've got my eyes on. More on that later.
Okay.
I suppose I'm going to go for that old cliche that I suppose sometimes less is more.
Certainly for me personally, apart from what I just said about the speaker on the Galaxy Watch Ultra, if I leave that out of the equation, I'm much happier with a dumb watch that just does the basics having it last 16 days and confidently wearing it all night and not thinking, having to think what the battery's doing. So yeah,
as long as it does the basics dumb stuff well, that's what you want, isn't it?
Exactly. So, Jim, back to you. What else? What have we missed in your meanderings?
I think we've pretty much covered everything. I did say, though, my wife and I are going on a trip to New York in December.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably will swap back to the iPhone and the Apple Watch Ultra just for that trip.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's got an iPhone as well, it just makes things easier while we're over there and stuff like that. But I will obviously take some additional phones. I can't go with just one phone. So I will be taking at least one, maybe two Android phones. We won't shout that too loud.
You got two wrists, Jim. Wear two watches.
Oh, no, she won't let me do that. I get beatings for that. I tried to hide it by buying a bicep strap for one, but she spotted that as well.
Yeah. Right, okay, and let's press on with the app wrap then. We ask the visitors, our guests, to, if they can, tell us about an app they're using and they think is good.
I went for Waze this time because I've realised that that's probably one of my most used apps. I use it all the time while driving. I even use it on journeys where I know where I'm going, you know, even if it's only 6 or 7 miles away, just to get a heads up on traffic, because it does do a great job on the traffic because it's crowdsourced data. Other Waze users do updates and you get to see that update maybe faster than the AA would publish it or the RAC. And I did put that in the show notes, and then Joe asked me a question, and I completely forgot that it does do speed cameras as well. You know, and it does do a great job of speed cameras, roadworks, and many other hazards sometimes, some road closures and so on and so forth. But and the good thing about it is cross-platform, so I can use it on the iPhone and I can use it on any Android phone. It didn't work too well on the Bigme iBrake, funnily enough. The scaling was wrong. When you use it in conjunction with Android Auto, the scaling is completely off. The buttons were so small I couldn't press them, let alone see them with my eyesight. So the scaling was out on that. But yeah, I do like being able to use Waze on either Apple CarPlay or Android Auto when I'm out and about. I think it's great. So I picked that as my kind of app I'd like to highlight.
Okay. So the big question then is, why is that any better than what Google Maps can do? Or, dare I say, Apple Maps?
I don't know, really. I just like it. Okay. I couldn't. I know Google bought Waze, didn't they, in fact? So it's owned by Google.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know why they haven't kind of merged them together. And, you know, kind of, I know there's, I thought they were starting to use some of the crowdsourced data in Google Maps as well.
Yeah, I was going to say taken a lot of features from Waze, I think, on Google Maps.
I think for me, it's just familiarity. Familiarity. I can't do it with the app itself because I've always used it. So it's just like, it's like a nice old pair of slippers, isn't it?
I must say that I've seen it in my colleague's car. It's a very good looking map as well. With nice little icons and bits and bobs on it. So
yeah, and it's like not as busy as Google Maps, I think.
No, yeah. I think it is a clean UI on there, very intuitive. The pop-ups as well that you mentioned to update things like roadworks is very, very good as well. Because I saw my colleague pressing on it while he was driving, which is good. He does his bit for the community, you see.
So do I. I get told.
Good. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, when I get a car and go anywhere, I'll test it all out with you.
Yeah.
Which is highly unlikely.
You've still got your moped, Ted?
Yeah.
You could put it on there.
Yeah, you can. I was talking to Chris Kelly about that some time ago, saying, you know, what are my options on the scooter? But the thing is, it's only a little 49cc thing. I don't really go anywhere. There's not much point. I just fly around the town. But yeah, I mean, he being a motorbike instructor and all that, he has it all set up and he's got it all working nicely and does loads of stuff for him. So yeah, of course it is possible.
I've still got a note of the click lock stuff you mentioned for putting them on your bikes and that.
Yes, that's right.
And it pops up every time I come home, but I just haven't done anything about it yet. So every time I get home, I get a note that says, remember Chris's, like, well, I've forgotten what they're called.
Peak Design, like, I think it was. Is it Peak Design?
Peak Design, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right, actually. So it pops up every time I come home at the moment. I still haven't done anything about it.
Right, okay, thanks a lot, Jim. Stick around if you've got the time and chip in with the stuff we're going to talk about. And we'll start, Joe, with news and phone news and general news. What's going on?
General news, I just put one thing in there. Someone actually put it in the PSC chat through Hot Deals, but actually on their website, extremeskins.co.uk, have got a Black Friday deal of 50% off all phone skins. Mm. That's going on till the 30th of November. The code is BF Phone. Very good stocking filler for your PSC friends. So yeah, head down there for that.
Yeah.
New phones. I need to have a look at this this quirky one in a minute that you've put in here, because it looks very interesting.
But I did like the look of that. I, like I say, I do like the more unusual phones. And I clicked on the link and looked at the image and I thought, I like that. And I wonder if it comes with a QWERTY attachment.
I saw the word QWERTY and I thought, wow, you're not wrong there. But before I get into that, OnePlus 15, there's a lot of people taking delivery of that now. And there's a lot of content online. So if you're interested in the OnePlus 15, check it out. It looks like it's... I've seen a lot of side-by-sides with the Oppo Find X9 Pro, and the specs would say that the Oppo should be much better. But I would say the photos from the OnePlus 15 are doing really well in the comparisons I've seen, which is quite interesting, because they haven't got the Hasselblad partnership on OnePlus 15 anymore. But it's no slouch. It does a decent job. I think the zoom's probably better on the Oppo from what I've seen. But the OnePlus isn't terrible, like some people were saying.
It's all about cameras, isn't it? The people that are slagging off the OnePlus 15, it's all to do with cameras and having stepped down from the 13 in the camera department. But for someone like me, and probably for someone like Jim, we just wouldn't care about that. And what they're doing with that, I think, would suit me really well. I'm quite interested in that. That's why I wanted to defend it, Ted,
because from what I've seen, and we're talking about Oppo flagship camera-centric phone, it's actually held up really well against it, in my opinion, from what I've seen.
The camera wouldn't be a consideration for me. It's got one, and that's good enough for me.
It seems capable. But going back to this quirky indie phone, it's a modular Nokia iPod hybrid. And there's proof there's still some fun in mobile tech. This does look very interesting. I highly recommend everyone clicks the link on this one.
It looks like a dumb phone, doesn't it?
Yeah, what's with the little keyboard coming off?
And you can put alternative keyboards on it. It's modular to some degree, magnetically attached. It looks really interesting. There's a remappable T9 keyboard. There's an iPod-style touch wheel, magnetically attached again, which they're currently calling the sundial, apparently. They're talking about putting a QWERTY, as you say, a QWERTY thing on it, gaming controls, a fancy remote control outlay, and although it runs Android AOSP, it doesn't have access to the Google Play Store, so it's not smart enough to do that stuff. But they reckon that there'll be a sideload APK files. Well, we'll ask Malcolm Bryant about that, if that's actually really possible. But Jim, do you fancy that?
I'm not sure.
I really like the look of it myself. It actually does look like, what's it called? The iPod, not the Nano. Is it the Nano? It looks like one of the early iPods when it's got the circular dial on there.
Yeah, the classic.
Yeah. It looks like a business device.
Is that the QWERTY keyboard looks more T9-ish, doesn't it? Looking at the pic. I clicked on the link to the upcoming QWERTY tile. So now I think it's kind of slightly maybe put me off a bit.
I thought they said that the QWERTY one had not been done yet, and maybe that's someone's idea of what it might look like.
It could be a mock-up, yeah.
Yeah,
because I can see the advert here, the side phone.
It looks interesting anyway.
They're advertising it as like a secondary device with the name side phone, aren't they?
Yeah.
I've just noticed that link takes you to a post in Reddit, so that's probably, like you say, it's probably a...
an AI construction.
Yeah, it could be, couldn't it? It says, as shown in a very cool promotional email.
I think it looks accurate.
I think it looks nice, though. I think it's a nice idea.
The phone certainly looks nice. Yeah. I definitely like the look of the phone and the fact that you can detach, you know, the little keyboard off and put other things on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would just prefer a full QWERTY rather than...
I do like the size of it. It's quite a nice little dinky device as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it will appeal to a certain group of people. Yeah. not the kind of people that will be interested in the Honor 500 series, which Joe can't say anything about because of the aforementioned embargo on what he knows and what we're not allowed to know, but I can. The 500 series launch date is confirmed for the 24th of November, which is today as we're recording this. And I do believe that it was announced, and it was everything in China that everyone was expecting it to be. 8,000 milliamp hour battery. There was an unboxing video. This is kind of outdated now, because if they've launched it properly today, this all these links will be a bit out of the sync. There is talk about the 8,000 milliamp hour battery not making it to Europe and to the UK, of course. More on that in a minute from Joe. And there's the Magic 8 Mini, which is a small version of it, apparently. Not really very clear if that's a thing or not yet. And there was one other link that I put in there about the 3D ultrasonic in-display fingerprint sensor, which would be an interesting development as well. But yeah, Joe, you can't say anything about it, but is there anything you can say, or your gut feeling?
So the only thing I will say, which is just purely my speculation, is the 500 range might not come to the UK.
What?
We skipped the 300, didn't we? So we went from the 200 to the 400, and it might be because of the frequency at which they launched this series. So like the 200 series came out June 2024. The 300 came out in China in December 2024. We then had global launch of the 400 in June again, 2025. So I suspect if history repeats itself, it will be December only in China. We shall see.
Okay, well,
I've never really had an Honor device, I'll admit. So never played with one. And looking at the link on the Honor 500, it looks very iPhone-like.
It is. It's iPhone-like in lots and lots of ways, in the software as well. I've got a 400 Pro here.
Yeah.
And you can see the Apple mark all over it in the software.
Right.
And some of that stuff is great. As I've said before, you know, Apple innovation and ideas are often really, really good, and that's great.
Mm.
But some things are not so good. And the look of the back of this 500 Pro or 500 looks, as you say, Jim, very Apple-ish, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yep.
It looks like a cross of the Apple, the Air, doesn't it? And
yeah, it does actually. Yeah.
And a Pixel, really, a bit of a cross of both.
No,
I mean the new iPhone Pros look like the Pixels, don't they? With the shelf on the back. Wonder where they got that.
Yeah,
they call it.
They're all copying each other, basically. I'm okay with that, as long as we get the good bits and not inheriting the crap bits in the process. Talking of Apple, Joe, there's one story here that you wanted to cover, wasn't there?
Yeah, I did put it into the MIUI group. So Android and iPhones can now share files, starting with the Pixel 10 series. So it uses AirDrop feature. So, I mean, Google did this without permission from Apple, from what I can see. So there's a good chance Apple will try and block this, but it's an interesting development, definitely.
Jim?
Yeah, definitely. I think Joe could be right there. Like, I think, you know, as we chatted quickly before the show earlier about an application called Beeper, didn't we?
Yes, yeah.
Getting your iMessages on your Apple iMessage on an Android phone, and they culled that pretty quickly, didn't they?
So, RCS fixed that.
Yeah.
Go on.
Honor quickly. Honor do have an app that you can download on an iPhone to send files from Honor device.
Yes.
Thinking on this, and I remember one of my mates mentioned to me an app called Blip, and we tend to use that to transfer files between devices, like especially because he lives in Manchester and I live in Norfolk and stuff. And I mean, that works phenomenally well, and it's cross-platform, so it's on iPhone and that. So it's a similar sort of thing, isn't it? So you can get apps that do that feature. But I guess this is just actually built into the OS, isn't it? Yeah.
Got a bonus app from Jim there, Blip.
Yeah.
Blip. B-L-I-P.
I know an even better way that does all this without any of this claptrap. Email. Attach it to an email. Send it to someone by email, for goodness sake.
Ted's been teaching me how to get back in touch with my email.
Yeah.
With your Titan phone, perfect for emailing.
And also nothing. Now, we'll move back to Joe here, because Joe's got his hands on a Nothing Phone 3, and I haven't done that yet. I'll link in the show notes to a post where it's quite an exhaustive post on Android Authority, which goes through all of the changes, but I'll also link to Joe's Screen On Time YouTube video, in which he highlights 26, is it?
Yeah, 26 of the changes.
Tell us all about the Nothing Phone 3.
Yeah, so my sim has actually gone into the Nothing Phone 3. I haven't tested the camera so much, but I did get given stable version of OS 4, which is on Android 16, a day earlier. It would have been 3 days earlier, but with emails going back and forth and signing an NDA, I didn't get it till a day before. But yeah, some really good stuff there. Like, one thing I've mentioned is extra dark mode, because I'm a fan of dark mode, but extra dark mode takes it that bit further.
Black.
With deeper blacks everywhere, which I really like, and it really goes well with Nothing aesthetic of their UI. It goes very, very well, in my opinion. But there's loads of great stuff there. There's a new glyph toy, which is a bit of a gimmick with the moon phase, but that's quite fun. The more glyph toys, the better it makes that feature. I'm in the honeymoon stage, obviously, so I'm quite enjoying the glyph myself.
Yeah,
it's like a second always on display. Like, you probably see in my video, I've got a little clock that comes up, which is quite nice. I've put it to the full brightness as well. Because I don't care about battery life. But yeah, the only thing with the camera that I have tested is the macro very briefly, which is quite good fun because it uses the telephoto lens, which I much prefer. Mm-hmm. And while we're on the macro, I'll quickly plug Camera Creations, because last week they did do a macro episode. Mm. So check that out at tedsalmon.com/camera-creations. I highly recommend it. So Nothing Phone 3, day-to-day, it's a very pleasant experience. Like I've already mentioned, I like the Nothing aesthetics on it. Actually, I've actually gone black and white on my home screen pretty much, with the odd splash of red. Some lovely widgets available in different sizes. That's something that came in Nothing OS 4, actually, the ability to do different sizes with the widgets. When I say widgets, I'm talking about the Nothing widgets that are available. There's a whole array of them, which is great. And there's some community made ones as well. There's a website called Playground, but you can't actually make your own yet because you have to sign up and apply for it. But yeah, I'll talk more about that if I actually get in. Mm-hmm. But there's some lots of good community made ones on there as well. What else should I say? The software isn't perfect, so as nice as it is, it isn't perfect, but it is very fluid, very simple. So it's like a Pixel but a bit cooler, if you like, mm-hmm. for a better word. But yeah,
what about stylish, I suppose. What about the physically, is it big? Does it feel like an iPhone, like everything else seems to?
No, actually, in the hand it does feel a lot lighter than I expected, which is nice. And you know what, when I saw it on launch, I thought that is bloody ugly. But it has grown
because
on
of
me.
The back.
Yeah, because of the bag. It has grown on me. And actually, now I've seen it in person, I actually really like it. Really, really like it. It's beautiful. So, yeah, that's changed my opinion massively.
Right.
And it's little things that they do think about, little things, like the little red square that comes on when you're recording.
Yeah.
The ability to, you can use your main camera and you can sort of frame yourself with the glyph. Which is quite nice, because it's better to use your main camera rather than your selfie camera where you can. And you've got the little glyph button where you can go through your glyph toys and activate the toys. That's quite quirky. Mm-hmm. It's got the essential button, which I don't really like, if I'm honest, because I accidentally press it all the time.
Yeah.
I think it could be really useful to some people, and I did showcase what it does. In so you can record So you can do a screenshot and you can actually record some audio about the screenshot, and it goes into an essential space. So it can be really useful. I just keep accidentally pressing it all the time.
Except that it's locked into their system. That was the trouble. Yeah. I had the CMF phone, 2 Pro, whatever it's called, and I was playing with the essential space, and it's just all locked down. I thought that with the OS 4, they were going to open that up in some way. So maybe you'll find it's a bit different now than it was.
Yeah, hopefully. I haven't tested it out enough yet because there's other bits that I like playing with. Sorry, my phone just started playing something randomly. I hope you didn't hear that. It was very frustrating. What else is there? So I haven't mentioned it in the show notes, but actually one thing I will mention is the fingerprints scanner is very good. But I remember this from the Nothing Phone 1, actually. I don't know why. It's just so low down. Because on many other devices, it's just that slightly bit higher up, which I prefer. Mm-hmm. So that's a bit annoying. But it does work very well, though. And I haven't found problems hitting it, so it's not too bad.
And the volume, the volume button's still on the left.
Yes. Yeah, I haven't found that too bad, actually.
I like that. I think it's good, yeah.
Although I normally prefer it on one side. Although I did panic then when it started playing something randomly. funny enough, it was an O2 advert, I think, but it was really weird. I need to get a review out by the 11th, I think, of December, because I've only got it out for 28 days. I've got it.
Right.
As you mentioned, I did do a 15-minute video on the 26 elements. Mm. I won't go through all of them on this podcast, but do check it out if it interests you. 15 minutes of your life you won't get back, though. Think about it before you do press that button.
I've just subscribed to your channel.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
A new subscriber.
Yes. It worked. Be talking about it. Brilliant. So you'll get to see the review, Jim, when it comes out.
I'm looking forward very much to your review of the Nothing Phone 3. Yeah. I came quite close to buying it, and at the moment it's on Black Friday sale for £629, and it's just really tempting, I think, because it should be £899, shouldn't it, or £799?
I do like the look of it. It's got the quirkiness and the unusual look that I like.
Mm.
Yeah. So it is
I'd argue that that's probably the correct price for it, Ted.
Yeah, so would I. I said that at the outset. I said this should be £599, and sure enough, it's eventually come down to it. I have got still, though, the Nothing Phone 2A Plus here, and they reckon that this week we're in now, the OS 4 is going to drop onto that as well. So I will get a chance to have a look at some of the software as well.
Yeah, because on the Nothing community, it did say within a couple of weeks of the launch, which was 21st. So, yeah, you should see it come down.
Yeah.
I did do an unboxing of the Nothing Phone 3. That's done as a short, which you'll find on my YouTube channel, TikTok and Instagram. Ted would recommend you watch it in mute, though, due to the track in the background.
Oh, yeah, that was dreadful. What a noise that was. It shows that I'm much older than you, Joe.
or I've got a bad choice in tracks or background, one or the other. So my V5 has still got my second SIM at the moment. As you well know, I was very reluctant to take my main SIM out, so it's got my second SIM. I haven't really played with any other devices. I haven't given any of them love since we last spoke, to be honest, even the devices that I've got under embargo, but I'll be getting into them soon, so watch this space.
Hurrah.
And after 5 weeks of not making any content, expect a more frequent flow from me now. Not just shorts, you'll be pleased to hear, Ted.
Hurrah!
There will be more long form. I've got a target of 500 subs by the end of the year. And to be honest, it's going really well. It was 446, but I'm guessing it's 447 now. Thanks, Jim. which is not bad. You know what? I hit 100 mid-July. And it's rather tough to grow on any platform doing tech, I find. So I'm quite pleased with that.
No, well you're done. Spot on. I just looked. It's 447 subscribers.
Yes. And lastly, on that note of my content, if anyone's got a video that they'd like me to make, please do drop me a message on MeWe or any other platform, and I'll definitely consider it and see what I can do.
I'll make you an offer. Joe, how would you like to play with the Unihertz Titan 2 for a while?
It's a crazy offer. Yeah, I'd love to, yeah. I'd absolutely love to.
I'll send it over to you. You can have a play as well, and hopefully payment would be a video on it.
Oh, yeah, no, if you send me that, I'll definitely do a video on it.
Cool,
definitely.
All right.
A long-form one as well.
Brilliant.
Cool.
Perfect. Well done. Okay, so that's you, Joe. Anything else?
No, I think that's it for me. I mean, I don't want to ramble on too much. As I say, I've gave my love to the Nothing phone mostly,
and
my V5 still.
Very good. Yeah, very good indeed. Okay, I've pretty much done all of my stuff. Oh, there was one bit of feedback from Mark Surrey that we were going to just cover, wasn't there, Joe, on the back of my thoughts on the Titan 2. Do you want to just do that?
Yeah. I think, did you say, I don't know if you pronounce it Surrey. I can't remember now.
No.
He'll tell us probably. He said he's finding, it does mirror what you guys have said actually. He said he's finding the physical keyboard an interesting way to input text, though I'm still quicker with a virtual on screen keyboard, which is what you said, Ted, isn't it?
Yeah.
He goes, maybe I'll get quicker in time. He goes, funnily enough, if you need to input large amounts of text, I do reach for the Titan 2. I gave the Titan 2 to my 14-year-old son. This is a good experiment, who has never used such a device. He couldn't understand why anyone would want a keyboard like that on a phone and why so wide. he was not sold on the form factor at all. The square screen looks fine, but I still find it cramped. Some apps like Govee Lights app letterbox to fit the screen, which looks nasty, which I can see a lot of people don't like letterboxing, which is a discussion on foldables as well, actually. And he finally says that the Titan will remain a second device, used as a fun and quirky alternative to my primary candy bar phone.
I think Mark's hit the nail on the head there. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But he's saying it still remain a second device, so he's not getting rid of it. So it is fun.
No, yeah.
Oh, I won't get rid of it.
No.
I don't think.
You'll just lend it to everyone so you don't have to review it yourself. Okay,
it's a far more qualified people.
Let's go to photo of the week, which is actually photo of the month this time, because we're announcing the photo of the month winner for October 2025, which was in the MeWe group. There was a choice of five, as there always is for our photo of the month competition, and it was won by Jeremy Harpham, who has not won before, and he's really surprised that he's won. He says, this is an achievement, given that I'm just a casual snapper. We'd gone to the beach specifically to watch the sunset. They'd gone to Hudson, Florida Beach, armed with his Samsung Galaxy S23 Ultra, using the 10x zoom, and he shot this gorgeous photograph which is called Cloud on Fire, and you can see why he's called it Cloud on Fire when you see it. Mm-hmm. I snapped some more regular ones, he says, and then that singular bizarre cloud started moving across the horizon like a cruise ship. I took six photos, but this one, with the alignment with the navigation markers, the guitar frets, really stood out, if I do say so myself. So well done, Jeremy, on winning that. And thank you to everyone for voting in our regular competition. And that is just really spooky, isn't it? I don't know what you think, Jim, but it's like moving across the horizon. And it's like, how can that happen?
Yeah, it's the most unusual photo I've ever seen.
Really?
It's pretty good. And I buy a load of things from Jeremy as well, so I'm glad he's won.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Joe?
Yeah, I admit I didn't vote this one, but because there was so much stiff competition, but I do really like it. And I actually like it more now he mentioned the guitar frets. I think that looks brilliant. Do you know what I'd love to do with this? Mirror it so it actually looks like a guitar. So, like, do a reflection in the water of that.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be really cool. But it's very unique, isn't it? It is very, very unique. Yeah, well done, Jeremy.
One of the things I like about it is that he's not afraid to use foreground as well. You know, the water in the foreground, which goes away from being out of focus and into focus, it's a feature of the image. And
yeah.
A lot of people would try and crop that out, but I'm okay with lots of foreground. And the horizon line goes across. Oh, hang on a minute. It's not straight, is it? Isn't it slightly lower on the left than it is on the right? Or is that my eyes?
It could be very slightly, yeah. We'll forgive you, though, Jeremy.
Well done, Jeremy. That'll go forward to the Photo of the Month competition in January when we get round to that. Photo of the Year competition in January. There's only two left to go on that, so keep snapping and keep sending in your photographs, and we'll have lots to look at. In Classified, if you want to join our Classifieds group, you need to email me. It's a members-only group, and you will have to ask to... get membership in there. So email me, you know where to do that. And if you don't, then you don't deserve to get in. My pick for this week is John Mason's Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. One terabyte storage device. So I'm guessing that's the 16 gigabytes of RAM. Titanium black in mint condition. Boxes and cases and the whole thing as new. Pristine, he described it. £599, 1 terabyte, S24 Ultra. That was definitely my pick of what's going on at the moment. Jim, did you pick anything out?
I did. I did spot the other day there was a Tag Heuer smartwatch advertised in the classifieds. I nearly couldn't help myself with my new watch fetish, but I've already got a dress watch, so I got, it still hasn't left my mind. I keep thinking about that Tag Heuer watch because it looks so nice.
Yeah.
But in the forum right now, it was the Pixel 9 Pro Fold. Now, I didn't take the price down, so I've just quickly scanned through to see if it's still there. Yeah, Gary Clark put it on.
Yeah, 495. 495.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. I didn't spot that. £495.
Cool.
I think if it was someone else's money at the moment, I'd go for that.
Right. £495. That's amazing, isn't it? Is it in, I can't remember the advert, is it in pristine condition or is there...
No, it's got a couple of dings on it.
That, okay.
That doesn't tend to bother me because once I've had them a while, they tend to have a couple of dings anyway.
Mm. Okay. Anything else?
Do you want one from me?
No, I didn't pick. Yeah, so go on, Joe. Sorry.
Sadly, I haven't picked any phones though, because Ted's picked the best phone on there. The X-Real 1 AR glasses are quite interesting. I wouldn't mind giving them a play
for
£200. But I've mentioned this one before, and I would really like to, but I can't with my missus's birthday and Christmas and all sorts. But there is the Huawei Watch GT6 Pro back on there for £175. Yeah. Now, that's a watch that I think can last 16-plus days, maybe more. And it is rather smart looking. So yeah,
I spotted that as well, but I'm trying not to think about it.
Yeah, it looks like a very good watch, and I think that would work. Correct me if I'm wrong. No, it does say here. Yeah, it works with iOS and Android.
Yeah, it works with both. Yeah.
So that would be quite a good watch for you, Jim.
I mean, that's kind of the key as well, because I've got an iPhone and I use Android phones all the time. So that's where the Garmin comes in, because it's cross-platform. Mm.
Yeah,
it's really, yeah, if you just want to have one watch, then something that, and if you are a serial phone swapper and you like to go across ecosystems, then something like the Huawei there and a Garmin is, you know, you can use it on both.
It goes to what you said, Ted, as well. No Wear OS, so
yeah. If you stick to something generic, I mean, don't. Going back to my Moto Watch Fit, I don't know if you can put that on an iPhone or not. But you can certainly put it onto any Android phone, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if they've written an app for iOS for it. And it just works. It will do everything. It's not trying to be too clever, you see. But anyway, yeah, it's been a bit of a watch week in some ways. I just clicked through to look at the link, Jim, that you supplied in Reddit of the QWERTY keyboard for that quirky phone. And I noticed that it's like the old Sony Ericsson keyboard. So two letters on each key.
The P900, was it? The Sony P900?
I think it was the
It's the grey square one, wasn't it?
Yeah, and on the bottom of the phone, it had it was just like this. They were laid out with multiple keys, and so you had to try and retrain yourself. One of them had rocked from left and right, and then you could I can't remember which one it was, but one rocked left and right for the different letters. But one of them, you also had to retrain your T9 brain to get it. Anyway, I'll put a link in the show notes to that Reddit post so people can have a look at it. And I will also put a link in the show notes to the Nomad Tech Project, which Sam and Joe do most Sunday evenings when Sam isn't out gallivanting in his caravan. But most of them, most Sunday nights, Joe and Sam do what we don't do here, which is to go on video, and you can actually see them talking to each other on YouTube. And that's really interesting. And they natter about this, that, or the other, and they sometimes have a guest, and they sometimes don't, and it's all good stuff. It's all about tech, although it can meander into football and pairs of underpants and whatever else comes along. So well done for keeping that going, Joe, and everyone should go and sign up to that channel, the Nomad Tech Project. PhoneShowChat.uk is our website for PSC, however, and you can go there and you'll get the links to all the stuff we've been talking about today. You'll also get that in your podcatcher with a bit of luck. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find me and everything I do, all the other audio podcasts and all the MeWe groups link out from there as well, as they do from PodHub UK. So Steve Litchfield is keeping the PodHub UK going on his website, so lots of ways to get to the stuff you want. If you want to buy me a coffee for what I do, then you can do that, and my link for that is paypal.me/TedSalmon. And if you want to buy Joe one, it's paypal.me/Hickey85, and that's about it. Have I forgotten anything?
I just wanted to quickly say the Nomad Tech Project's claim for fame is we actually got Ted on camera as well.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Very good episode. If anyone wants to see that one,
the second time I've ever been on camera. Steve got me to do a video once for the HTC Desire back decades ago, and it was just dreadful and I hated it. But I suppose age has made me a bit less wary of cameras.
He was a natural, Ted. He was a fantastic guest.
Anyway, there you go. Nomad Tech Project. So make sure you go and sign up like Jim has, and we'll go from there. Thanks a lot, Jim, for joining us. We will have a next paper special and mop up this stuff about the QWERTY, particularly if you're sending it to the Titan to Joe. We'll get the three of us get back together in the relatively near future and get a lot of feedback on all of that stuff. So thanks for joining us.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm Great. Looking forward to it. And Joe, I'll get that out to you before we go off on our city break.
So. Oh, excellent. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks ever so much for listening to everyone. And we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another show. Who's our guest on the next show, Joe? Oh, it's Gavin. So Gavin Fabiani-Lemond is on our next show. And he will be talking about whatever phones he's got on the go at the moment. I think he's got a Xiaomi still and possibly,
he's
possibly having a break from iOS at the moment, but he certainly knows about iOS.
He's got a Garmin as well.
Ah, there you go. So we've got lots of interesting stuff coming up 2 weeks' time on PSC 875. Be there or be square.
Bye-bye.
Bye.